Greetings! Greetings once again. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, we're not going to waste a whole lot of time with the intro. Cut the intro shorter now. Stop wasting time. So I'll stop wasting time explaining how I cut the intro shorter, stop wasting time, so we can get on with the show. By the time you hear this, I'm hoping that you're no longer freezing, although you probably are. We didn't bother doing the show in January because in many parts of the Midwest and the Northeast, it was too cold to download audio in any fashion, so we figured what's the point. We just took some time off, tried to stay warm ourselves. And so I'm not going to comment on the latest contrived violence, whether it's in Minneapolis or Texas or Austin or New York City or Los Angeles or wherever it happens to be at the moment. I'm not going to comment on it for fear of being behind on what is the latest. But you know, this latest contrived episode of violence brings to my mind the Me Too movement. Does anyone here remember the Me Too movement? It was quite the movement, and it was quite contrived. Why does this bring to mind, why does the current violence, the ICE, anti-ICE, pro-ICE, ICE baby violence, bring to my mind the Me Too movement? Well, because both are the result of the vast majority of people throwing off godly mores in pursuit of hedonism, then expressing outrage when the natural outcome of such behavior occurs. So let me explain. With the Me Too movement, if you allow young men to write songs and sell records and make movies and make fortunes on defiling women, then soon your sister and your daughter get defiled, and then you're angry about it. And that's what America did from the 90s through the mid-2000s. They allowed young men to make a living, and not just a living, fortunes, and to build other people's fortunes on defiling women. That's what they did to make their money, and then everyone got upset that women were being defiled. That was the Me Too movement. Everybody got mad about it, even though the whole time they were buying tickets to the movies and they were buying the records the whole time. The women too, by the way. So if you turn a blind eye to your own criminal behavior and that of your children long enough in pursuit of the aforementioned hedonism and fortunes, pretty soon you're living in a police state, and then you get angry about it, which is where all the people who bought all those records and tickets in the 90s and early 2000s, and now their kids, we're now a generation on from all that, shocking as that is, now they're all upset that they live in a police state, but they threw off all the godly mores that would have prevented the police state. You had to have a police state when you have people openly, publicly advocating the defiling of women for money. Once you allow that, you're going to need a police state. Things are going to get pretty ugly, and that's where we are now. And then for all of you who are upset about the police state and the welfare state and all the money they're stealing from us, and all the money the Somalis are stealing and shoveling out the back door and shipping over to Somalia on a pallet. Well, if you trust godless bureaucrats to take care of you and your mom and dad in your old age so that you can pursue the aforementioned hedonism in your youth and then into your middle age, and before you realize it, you wake up and you're a slave and people are ripping you off left and right and stealing all your money. And whose fault is that? Is it the Somali immigrant, the pirate who figured out how to get over here and pirate you? Is it their fault? Well, there is some fault that lies with them. But most of the fault lies with us, right here, you and me. And so I'm going to quote a passage from the scripture to help us launch 1 Timothy chapter 4, starting in verse 8. Godliness is profitable unto all things. What is godliness? Not the throwing off of all godly mores in the pursuit of entertainment and salacious stimulation and fortunes. This is the opposite. Godliness is profitable unto all things, having promise of the life that now is and of that which is to come. This is a faithful saying and worthy of all acceptation. For therefore we both labor and suffer reproach because we trust the living God, who is the Savior of all men, especially of those that believe. These things command and teach. Now, there's not as much money in it, and there's not as much salacious stimulation. There's not as many fortunes. There's not as much freedom. But you won't wake up in a police state with your daughter in a ditch by the side of the road, or you're freaking out wondering what happened. Okay, but now, but there is really good encouraging news, ladies and gentlemen. I have a report from modernity.com. A report that surveys indicate surging spirituality. That's right. Spirituality is surging. Maybe as much as 43%. That's right. The headline says, faith has grown. It's a national revival. That's right. 83% of people believe in God or a universal spirit. 79% sense something like spiritual. 79%. So we're doing fine. Okay, this is from the Pew Research Center. They say that the long-term decline in Christian affiliation appears to be leveling off. And then they go through a bunch of percentages and this. But listen, this is the headliner here. The nuns have plateaued about 28%. That's not the Catholic nuns. That's the N-O-N-E. That's the atheists. The new atheists. The disciples of Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens and the like. They've plateaued at about 28%, which I was correct, that the new atheism is dead. And we didn't need to align ourselves with the ID fools in order to kill it. Man is a spiritual creature. The new atheism was never going to last. But here, Pew now reports a massive resurgence in Christianity. Now, where they get that from, I'm not exactly sure, because they just said that 83% believe in God or a universal spirit. That's not Christian. 79% sense something like spiritual. Well, that's not Christianity. But if you want to count those as Christianity, then you could be encouraged. And you go ahead, I'm not going to. They go on to cite Bible sales skyrocketing. Skyrocketing, I said. So 43 to 41.6% increase in this or that consumption of the ESV and the NIV and a bunch of other tripe. The assassination of Charlie Kirk amplified this because people are relatively shallow and it takes someone being killed right in front of their eyes to get them to even think about anything having to do with anything to do with anything involving God. Anyway, nowhere in this article is it explained what Christianity is. Christianity, apparently, according to Modernity, means you buy a Bible and you sense something like spiritual. That's Christianity. That's not Christianity. Good luck with all that. Okay. Christianity is surging here at the Weekly Worldview and hopefully at your house too. But there's something else surging, folks. And well, let me just get into it because it is the topic of the month. This is a story from last month where a prominent female blogger, and I don't know if I'll get her name here. Let's see. Upset Americans say they won't be paying taxes in 2026 because of all the reports of rampant fraud in all the federal program. You find out that everybody who's been at the public trough for the better part of my entire life has been ripping us off. Why? Well, I think I said it in the last show. Once the money is already stolen, it gets very easy to steal. thieves steal very easily from one another because everything they're stealing is already stolen. So that's that like cuts the guilt level in half. So it's a lot easier. So all the stolen money that the federal and state governments have accumulated by robbing us blind, Somali pirates come in, they look at that, they got no problem stealing that. And it's not just them, by the way. It's white politicians, primarily it's white liberal female politicians of the last 50 years who will be found to have been most responsible, including Gavin Newsom and Tim Walz. And the girl in New Jersey, whatever his name is, Shapiro, all of them, all the white female liberals who've been robbing us blind, starting with Bill Clinton and his husband, her husband. The tax revolt, though, here, let's get back to this. This was announced by a prominent female blogger who I'm not going to name because she's a pig. And I just try not to name or give any credence to pigs. But this particular pig, conservative MAGA type, posted, "Forget it, I'm not paying taxes this year." That's what she posted on X, and it went viral. Now, she didn't say forget it. She said something else starting with F. "Forget it, I'm not going to pay taxes this year." So this is a girl, a woman, a conservative woman, posting that online, that word. Instead of saying, "Forget it, I'm not paying taxes," she says, yeah. So that goes viral, and now there's a movement afoot to perhaps to stage a tax revolt at the federal level anyways. She then posted, "When the IRS comes after me, I'll blow that up into a huge national story." And then Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene put her pants on, got into the ring, and reposted this pig's vulgar comments, and now we have a tax revolt. Marjorie Taylor Greene says, "Imagine if millions of Americans did this." At which point I ask, "What, Marjorie? Have a tax revolt? Refuse to pay taxes, or post 'forget it' online? Get vulgar and because Marjorie, I don't know if you've noticed, but millions of people are already getting pretty darn vulgar." As a matter of fact, let me go to, this happened a few weeks ago, so you may have forgotten it, but the President of the United States, in response to a heckler at the Ford plant, the President of the United States flipped off a person in the audience and then said F you to the person. The President of the United States, in broad daylight, in public on camera, did that and said that. And then the White House came out and said that was appropriate because this heckler was accusing Donald Trump of covering up some whatever the heckler was saying. It's not never appropriate for the president to give somebody the finger and say that. Well, he just mouthed the words, Doug. No, he didn't just mouth the words. He said it in public in front of God and everybody in broad daylight. Have I said it before on the air here? I think I have. When people start saying that to one another, it's not long before they start shouting that at one another, and then it's not long before there's a fist fight. And if they have guns, there'll be a gunfight. That's what that leads to. And that's what's happening. Marjorie Taylor, thank you very much for contributing. Gavin Newsom, while Donald Trump was saying F you to everybody and giving everybody the finger, "Oh, no, Doug, it was only the heckler." Oh, no, it wasn't. It was everybody. When the President of the United States does that, he does that to everybody, and it's shameful. It's despicable. It's dangerous. You know, when you have some leftist nobody on MSNBC with eight people watching and they say and do things like that, it's relatively meaningless. They're nobody. He's the President. When you have some creep hired heckler in the Antifa anti-ICE riot screaming F you at the police, it's relatively meaningless. They're nobody. This is the President of the United States. Does it and says it. Anyway, I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed. And Donald Trump, somebody should be shaming him for it. Nobody is. Gavin Newsom, in the meantime, says that Donald Trump is trying to stoke a civil war for white supremacy. Okay. And here's what I'm going to tell you, folks, with both sides at this level of rhetoric, it's civil war, maybe not this week, maybe not next week. But maybe and almost certainly in my children's lifetime, there's going to be a civil war. You know, America was founded in a civil war. I know we call it the revolution. We try to call it the war for independence. It was a civil war where people started shooting against and killing their neighbors. And then armies became involved. But America was founded in bloodshed and violence, and it's going to end in bloodshed and violence. And I think almost certainly now, based on the modern rhetoric in my children's lifetime, when politicians and the elite, and then eventually even just average citizens, insult each other in public with the crudest, most vulgar profanity, war inevitably follows, unless someone steps in and teaches them how to find repentance and forgiveness. And there's only one place for that, and it's with God. And it's not just any God, and it's not just any spirit, and it's not just with sensing something spiritual. No. It's only found in Jesus Christ. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us as we round first and head for the home field. All right. Now, meanwhile, while this is going on, speaking of Jesus Christ, I want to speak a little more about Christianity because it is an interest of particular interest to me. In fact, it's way more interesting than the news. In fact, I'm finding it hard to look at the news anymore and just find things to make smart aleck comments and comedic interpretations and assertions. I'm losing interest. I'm no longer interested. What I'm more interested in is a story like this from the Unforgiven file. Charlie Kirk's widow, Erica Kirk, has formally demanded a speedy trial for the accused assassin of Charlie Kirk. That's right, Erica Kirk has publicly demanded and filed legal paperwork to speed up the trials for the punishment of the assassin. At which point I say, wait a minute. I thought that Erica Kirk had already forgiven the assassin. Did she not, or am I mistaken? She did, right? Well, the fact is, she didn't. Now, she said she did, but in fact, she didn't. And that's dishonest. But you know what? Erica Kirk can be not forgiven. She can be excused, not excused. I can understand why she thinks she forgave the assassin, but she still wants him to be put on trial and thrown in prison for life. Is because Erica Kirk doesn't really understand what forgiveness is, because the entire Christian industry, the Christianity industry, has lied to her and her parents and her parents' parents to where everyone is completely confused about what forgiveness even is. They think you can forgive someone and then still want them to be punished, which is not true. Well, to forgive someone means that you've forgiven them. And that you no longer, they're no longer going to be punished, and you don't want them to be punished. And in fact, you would lobby against them being punished. How do I know that? Because that's what Jesus did. That's forgiveness. Not only did he forgive us, he's willing to step in and lobby that we don't be punished. But Erica doesn't understand that because she's a mainline denominational Christian of some sort, maybe. And so why do I say maybe? And by the way, so I've laid off Erica Kirk, but it's been long enough now, okay? It's been long enough now that I've given the due respect to the mourning widow and all of that, okay? Now she's in the arena of ideas with her pants on and her MAGA hat on backwards, and so she's fair game at this point. Here's what she said about the assassin. Here's what she said before she said she wants him punished. I forgive him because it was what Christ did and what Charlie would do. Okay, well, we don't know what Charlie would do. Charlie hopefully is in heaven now, and he doesn't have any fleshly confusion. So, but while he was on earth, I'm sure Charlie would have forgiven him because Charlie was a lot like Erica, a product of the Christianity industry. But she says, I forgive him because it was what Christ did. No, it's not. Not the way you just did it, Erica. Jesus did it different. I just explained that. She said, the answer we know from the gospel is love and always love. Love and always love. Okay. Eric is right about that. The answer is always love and only love. But because of the Christianity industry's effect on Erica and Charlie and others like them and most of you, we don't know what love is. Love sometimes hurts. Love sometimes means giving a guy a Bible and telling him, hey, you're guilty. In 3 days, we're going to put you to death. You're going to meet Jesus. So let me tell you about him right now. Anyway, but we don't know what love is. We think love means always forgiving everybody, no matter what, no matter nothing, we're not even thinking about it anymore. We might not even be capable of understanding what love is. I'm here to tell you, folks, you are not capable of understanding what love is until you understand the gospel of God's grace. You don't know. You think you know, and you pretend to know, but you don't know. Well, God will teach you, and I'll try to point you in the right direction. Let me show you, let me prove to you that Erica Kirk does not understand the gospel nor forgiveness. Here's what she said in a recent NBC News interview. I've had so many people ask, do you feel anger toward this man? Like, do you want to seek the death penalty? I'll be honest, said Erica Kirk. I told our lawyer, I want the government to decide this. Now, she forgave him, yet she wants a government. Now, listen to this. Erica Kirk, quote, I do not want this man's blood on my ledger, because when I get to heaven and Jesus is like, eye for an eye, is that how we do it? And this keeps me from being in heaven and from being with Charlie, ... So Erica thinks it's possible that by not forgiving the unrepentant assassin of her husband, the father of her children, she might be kept out of heaven if she doesn't forgive him. So she doesn't understand. She obviously does not understand that you cannot forgive someone and then call for their prosecution. She obviously doesn't understand God's forgiveness of her, which means she might not have it. Just so you know, I know to imply that Erica Kirk is anything less than a saint who's going to be placed at the highest level of heaven. I know that's blasphemy and sacrilege, but I'm just saying someone should be concerned about the destiny of her eternal soul. Someone or close to her, hopefully, because she may not have it since she doesn't understand it. I always give people the benefit of the doubt and assume that they're going to hell. And that's where I assume right now. I assume Erica Kirk is on her way to hell. And hopefully I could have a chance to help her. Hopefully someone close to her is listening to the show and they would preach the gospel to her. Make sure she understands, because right now she does not. Now, speaking of misunderstanding, Scott Adams, the cartoonist for Dilbert, since Dilbert isn't a real person. Scott Adams comes to us this week from the End of the World file. Cartoonist and liberal atheist Scott Adams died in January at the age of 68 years old. He was killed by cancer. After asserting for his entire life that he was the captain of his own fate and destiny, he was killed by cancer, even though he didn't want to die that way. So this should be a lesson to all of you atheists out there. Well, it should really everybody out there. is that no matter how big you are, how much money you have, what a great reputation you have, and how much everybody thinks of you, and how much everybody relies on you, you could be taken out in a moment by something that you have absolutely no control over. Just so you know. And that's what happened to Scott Adams in the month of January 2026. He said in a final statement, "If you wonder about my choices regarding my estate, please know I'm free of any inappropriate influence of any sort." Now, why did he feel compelled to say that? Because he was about to say something for which most of his atheist friends would question his sanity. He was going to entertain Christianity as if it were worth entertaining. And, you know, atheists, hardcore atheists, if there is such a thing, and I think there must be, hardcore atheists do not want Christianity to ever even be considered considerable. It's so ludicrous and laughable that to even ponder the idea of considering the fact that Jesus Christ might be worth thinking about is ridiculed. And that's where Scott Adams spent his entire career, was among those people, trading awards and checks with them. Scott Adams was a liberal atheist his entire life. I know he became MAGA for the last 5 minutes. I'm not impressed. Forgive me. Anyway, here's what he said in his final statement. "Next, many of my Christian friends have asked me to find Jesus before I go. I am not a believer, but the risk-reward calculation looks attractive, so here I go," said Scott Adams before he was, right before he's about to actually go. Here's what he said, quote, "I accept Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior and look forward to spending an eternity with him. The part about me not being a believer should be quickly resolved if I wake up in heaven." And then a lot of Christians, unquote, sorry, a lot of Christians posted this as if it was good news. Because this proves that most Christians don't understand Christianity, which would lead one to ask, are they Christians? Can you not understand something and be that thing? Can you not understand a belief system and hold that belief system? Hey, I'm just asking, okay? Don't get mad at me. I'm just the messenger. People who claim to be Christians posted this online as if Scott Adams is in heaven. And I'm telling you right now, he's in hell, burning in hell for all of eternity. I'm telling you that right now. Because I understand the Christian belief system and I have adopted it to myself. And I have preached it and taught it to other people. So I understand it, and this is not it, Scott. Doug said to Scott as he was burning in hell for all of eternity. At the very end of his life, he jokes about not being a believer but finding Jesus, because all the idiot Christians around him, the small c Christians, told him that all he needs to do is accept Jesus into your heart. Accept Jesus, they told him. So they never told him what it actually means to be saved from eternal damnation. So Scott had no clue, hurtling toward hell and an eternal punishment without knowing how to get out of it, because the idiots around him told him, just say yes to Jesus. And so at the very end, he mocks God and demands that God prove himself. Right? You see what he said here? The part about me not being a believer should be quickly resolved, God. If you're real, you'll show me. So he's dying, demanding that God prove himself to him, and that's not going to make God very happy. You better not have that attitude when you cross over onto the other side, punk. It will not work out well for you. Demanding that God prove himself is the definition of you and your flesh glorying in his presence. And God says, no flesh shall glory in my presence. And that's not that he doesn't want any flesh to glory in his presence. It's not that he can't deal with you being a smart aleck and glorying in his presence. It's God just telling you it's not going to happen. It can't happen. Young man, you had better understand your place. It's the Weekly Worldview. Did they have a, was there a screamificator effect back in the 80s? Did they have a roarificator effect that they put on the vocals? Where did they, how did all those singers sound like a roaring lion? Roar! What was up with that? Okay. So we've been in the spiritual for the first half of the show. Let's get into some of the more temporal stories. From the Dystopia Now file, we have a report on the Trump accounts. You've heard of the Trump accounts? Listen to this. As reported by Breitbart, which is now officially nothing but a MAGA organ. Breitbart. Everyone associated with it. They might as well be on the payroll of the United States government. Here's what they report. President Trump and Secretary Scott Bessent held an event to feature, and it featured other senior administration officials, everyday Americans, and stakeholders. So who reports a government propaganda announcement like this? Oh, a government propaganda organ like Breitbart. Okay, this is not journalism, Breitbart. This is propaganda. Anyway, they had an event to announce, not even to announce the Trump accounts, but just to come out and propagandize about them because they already been announced. It's been around. It's been in the news and blah, blah, blah. But they have an event where everyone puts on a tie and they stand up and they line up the news media, which is Izvestia and Perestroika, and what was the name of the Russian newspaper? I can't remember now. Pravda. Pravda. Is that what Breitbart means in Russian? Pravda. Anyway, they go on about the big announcement that they made about the Trump account. This is where the government of the United States will put $1,000 into your new baby's account. Uh-huh. The Trump administration is committed to offering more financial opportunity for families by taking money by force from some families and giving it to the children of other families. Unquote. No, I made the last part up. The first part was the Trump administration. No, it's actually Breitbart. I'm sorry. I thought this was written by Scott Bessent himself, but it turns out to be an alleged reporter from Breitbart. Says the Trump administration committed to offering more financial opportunity for families. And then I added the part about them taking the money by force from some families and giving them to others because I'm one of the families they're taking the money from by force. Because, well, anyway, I guess if any of my kids, oh, by the way, if you have a baby between January 1st and 2025, or I guess if you had, oh, and then if you have a baby on or before December 31st, 2028, your baby will be eligible to receive $1,000. Listen to how Breitbart reports this. Children born between January 1st and 2025 and December 31st, 2028 are eligible to receive $1,000 from Treasury. What? From Treasury? Treasury? Is that a person? Because I always thought of it as the Treasury, because, like, it's not my money, it's not your money, it's not his money, it's the Treasury. That isn't that, like, our money in the Treasury? Oh, you just call it Treasury as if it's a person? Okay. Folks, this is what government in the place of God does, is they refer to themselves as if they're people. The Treasury is not Treasury. The checks are not going to come from Treasury because Treasury's not a person. The money's going to come from me, whom they've taken it from by force is going to be given to others. Well, maybe. They're eligible, you see. That's what a lot of people miss with these government programs. People think Trump's going to give $1,000 to every baby, but he's not. What he's going to do is he's going to make you jump through a bunch of hoops and fill out a bunch of papers, and there's going to be tests, and there's going to be this, and there's going to be that to filter out this and that, and then they're only going to give it to some percentage of the people because you're all a bunch of morons, and you're easily duped. So they know all they have to do is say it, and then they can filter a bunch of you out, and then they can rip everybody else off, and then they can send the money to their own accounts in Switzerland and Somali in suitcases, and before you know it, you wake up and you're broke. Congratulations. And the whole time you had your MAGA hat on, you got the tattoo and everything, you thought everything was going great. You wake up, you're broke. You've been robbed. And it serves you right. All right. After Treasury gives your Uncle Treasury, maybe that's Uncle Treasury. After Uncle Treasury gives the baby $1,000, you as a parent may contribute up to $5,000 a year and employers up to $2,500. So can you believe that the government has the audacity to tell people and employers how they can spend and save their money? This is unbelievable. Talk about waking up in slavery. You wake up in political slavery because your grandparents got scared of going broke or being hungry or running out of cornflakes or whatever. It's sad. It's embarrassing, frankly, as an American. Meanwhile, you want to talk about embarrassing? Listen to this, again, from the Dystopia Now file. Toyota in Germany has confirmed that they're shutting down the preheating feature they had on their cars. You can subscribe to the My Toyota app, and you go to your phone, you can turn your car on a cold morning, and you can preheat it. How about that? That's pretty nice, huh? I like that. Well, they've shut it down. It's been deactivated on combustion engines across Germany. Why? What's the reason?
Well, we think this is unnecessary running. It creates unavoidable exhaust pollution.
That was a statement from Adolf, the global climate change czar over there in Germany, who writes the rules on who can and who cannot warm up their car.
No unnecessary running!
So Toyota disabled the function to protect the vehicle owners from fines
and possible prison time. And if you keep pushing it, execution. This is unnecessary running. Who says you have the right to be warm?
Warm, I said. Warm. Okay. Folks, this isn't some future dystopia where conservative presidents steal money to give babies $1,000 and where Nazis prevent you from warming up your car in Germany. This isn't some dystopian future. No, this is happening right now. Because at some point, our grandparents lost their nerve. I'm not sure where it happened. But, this is why we all are afforded and we can't offer each other some grace in the desperately embarrassing stupidity of the situation we find ourselves. We can't offer each other grace because most of it is our parents and our grandparents' fault. They're the ones who messed things up before we were born so bad that it would be virtually impossible for us in any temporal way to recover it to anything at all resembling freedom and America and the American ideal and all that stuff. Meanwhile, speaking of all that, let's go back in the Wayback Machine, because new data indicates, this is from the Dim Old World file, the French National Institute of Statistics and Economic Studies, otherwise known as INSEE. That's way too many words. If you work for that bureaucracy, just understand that you've lost some portion of your soul just by taking that job. But anyway, let's move on. The Institute reveals that there were 651,000 deaths in 2025 in France, and 645,000 babies born. So for those of you who matriculated in the government schools, do the math. 651,000 people died, 645,000 people were born. That's a net loss of life in France. For the first time since, let's see here, you have to go back to the end of the First World War to find a total fertility rate this low. Oh, no. Oh, that's the fertility. Oh, no, it gets worse. Okay, so the population decline, the net loss of life, hasn't happened since World War II, when people were being slaughtered across France in wholesale fashion. And then the statistical reportage goes on to report on the fertility rate, which is below 2.1 needed to replace your population. In France, it's like negative 8.4. It's very sad. Fertility in France. So mortality in France is worse than it's been since the Germans were slaughtering everything French that wouldn't say Heil Hitler. And the fertility rate is worse than at the end of the First World War, when most of the men in France were dying in trenches rather than being home having babies. So the days leading up to the Third World War resemble the days following the First and Second. No, I'm not saying there's going to be a Third World War. I don't know if we're capable of pulling off a Third World War. I think everyone around the globe is too lazy, stupid, overly entertained, fat, and... did I say stupid? Lazy? To even pull off a Third World War. It'll be some sort of conflagration, but it'll be much lower level because, you know, there's someone who put in all that work. Getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning to start an invasion is probably out of the question at this point. Meanwhile, let's go back to the widespread conspiracy file where we check in with Dr. Anthony Fauci and Dr. Collins over there at the CDC, HHS. I forget exactly who this is, but they were conspiring, shockingly enough. While we were told not to be conspiracy theorists as the COVID hysteria unfolded, they were conspiring. Research came in by 2021 suggesting that natural immunity was far more effective than any vaccinations that had been in development. Shocking, right? I know. I really hung it out on a limb there in the fall of 2020 saying, look, we're all going to get this and we'll develop immunity because, like, you know, it's a cold virus. Everyone said, oh, Doug, you're crazy. We don't know. This might be from Mars. It might kill everybody twice. I said, no, I don't think so. As along with other clear-headed people who knew a lot more about infectious disease than I do, they all said, well, this is a cold virus. It's not from Mars. It's not going to kill everybody twice. We're going to develop immunity. And yeah, some people are going to die. Yes. Okay. Anyway, now it's all been plainly laid out. There are emails exchanged where they knew that the data from a study in Israel showed that natural immunity was highly effective against the COVID-19 virus. And they decided... They decided instead of going with that and telling the public, hey, the vaccines, don't worry about that. You're going to get natural immunity. It'll be great. They went with, they rejected the natural immunity argument as an exemption for vaccine mandates for the sake of what they said is, well, we wanted the message to be simpler. Because, like, get natural immunity, that was a lot more complicated than get the vaccine or we'll fire you. Throw you in jail or call your mother something bad or we'll make you stitch something into your clothing and walk around as one of the outcasts. So the stop freaking out and get natural immunity argument was apparently too complicated. So they, for the sake of a bureau, the reporters at Just the News actually allowed this to be called. The feds ultimately rejected natural immunity as an exemption to vaccine mandates for bureaucratic reasons, for the sake of simpler messaging, not science. It wasn't for the sake of simpler messaging. You shouldn't even be allowed to say that about what they did. They lied about it to keep people scared and to have power and to make money, and they should all be arrested and they all should be put in prison and they should all be given a Bible and told in 3 days, you're going to meet Jesus. I started a joke which started the whole world crying. Oh, but I didn't see that the joke was on me. Oh no. And I started to cry, which started the whole world laughing. It's the Weekly Worldview. That's right. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, and thank you very much for sticking with us. We go now into the Proctocracy file, where we check in with the microplastics hysteria. A lawsuit has been filed in California, if you can imagine that, by Linda Karen Cheslow of Santa Rosa. She claims that Ziploc asserts that their products are freezer and microwave safe. She says it's not true. We're all being exposed to dangerous microplastics. Not just microplastics, dangerous microplastics. And how do we know they're dangerous? Well, they're plastic and they're very small. That's scary. The lawsuit will focus on the lack of warning labels, because what we need, ladies and gentlemen, are more warning labels. You know, the rug in my bathroom has a warning label on it. And my sliding glass door has a warning label on it that makes it look like an industrial catastrophe, hideosity. It's ugly. But you have to have a giant black and red sticker on your beautiful sliding glass door that you paid thousands of dollars for. It's got this industrial grade sticker, black and red. Beware, this door could kill you. And that's what we need, of course, is more warning labels, because we don't have enough. And so Karen there in Santa Rosa is going to get us some. She says there's no warning despite the risks. There's no warnings. There's no disclaimers. There's no disclosures. So don't worry, Karen. All three are coming up thanks to your lawyers. After the settlement, of course. You and your lawyers will split a few million bucks. The racketeers on both sides will. You'll get the least of it, Karen. We'll all get the brunt of it. And your lawyers will get the most money. And the other lawyers who then write the disclaimers, they'll get some money. And then they'll line up and they'll start figuring up the next hysteria. By the way, folks, there is evidence that there's microplastics everywhere. There is yet no clinical evidence that microplastics are bad. Maybe they're not optimum. I'll give you that off the top, you know. But everything is not optimum, just so you know. And there's no guarantee that you're not going to die tomorrow in a very difficult, painful, and horrible, awful way. So, there. And there's nobody you can sue about that. So you better be prepared for that one, okay? There's not going to be a food and drug. There's not a Food and Death Administration to write regulations to help you through that. But that's what Christianity is here for. That's what Jesus came and died for your sins for. If you need help with that, give us a call, send us an email. We're happy to help. According to the FDA, studies have reported the presence of microplastics in food, salt, seafood, sugar, beer, bottled water, honey, milk, tea, everywhere. It's everywhere. It's in your brain, it's in your liver, it's in your kidneys, it's in your toenails. All the evidence does not demonstrate that microplastics pose a risk to human health. There's no standardized methods for how to detect the quantity of or characterize microplastics or nanoplastics in any way yet. Let's start the lawsuits. We don't even know what we're suing about, but we're going to sue because people will settle. And then before anybody understands anything, money's been exchanged, and then we ignore the problem. And maybe it turns out to be a problem. Maybe not. It doesn't matter. It's all just part of the industry at this point of utilizing one another while pretending we care about one another. But which is how lawyers make their living, by the way. They pretend to care about other people when in fact what they're actually doing is just using them to make money. And because we live in a proctocracy, all of us are being conditioned to behave that way, to pretend we care while using one another. And the only place you can get away from that is in the church. Because the only place you're not being conditioned to behave that way is when you're learning from the scripture. And so I encourage you to do so. Okay, now, speaking of the proctocracy, we go to the peak autism file. That's right. Mattel developed an autistic doll. They started quite some time ago. It took them almost 18 months to develop the doll, to develop a doll. Why? Well, because they were working in partnership with the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network, which spent an awful lot of time twiddling their thumbs over their navel and counting the fibers in the rugs and whatever. I don't know. Autistic Self-Advocacy Network. What is self-advocacy? I mean, isn't that just a natural state of being? I mean, by breathing, aren't you advocating for yourself? I'm sorry. I apologize. I don't want to offend any of the autistic or anyone who has an autistic person in your life. I apologize. I do want to offend the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network just for their name, which is ridiculous. They worked with Mattel. They're a nonprofit organization that I'm certain was funded quite well by Mattel to be included in this news article so that they can all appear that they care about one another, when in fact what they're actually doing is just using one another for financial gain. Let's see. Was there anything else I wanted to? There was something else I wanted to say about this article, as if it mattered, but I'm not. Let's see. The Autistic Self-Advocacy Network is a nonprofit organization that advocates for the rights and better media representation of people with autism. Well, you know, I mean, I think that's what we do. I'm not sure. I don't know. You know, I want to know. You want to know. I hope you'll understand what I'm saying. You see, it's not dumb. It's not that I'm dumb. It's not that I'm stupid. I'm not dumb. It's not like people say I'm not dumb. I'm smart. I'm smart. It's not... That was from the CEO of the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network. He was advocating for himself there. It's not like people say that I'm dumb. I'm not. I'm smart. Smart. The eyes of the new Barbie doll shift slightly to the side because people say that people with autism sometimes avoid direct eye contact. You know what that is? That's young people trying to build an excuse not to make eye contact with adults. If a little kid doesn't make eye contact with adults with respect, the kid should be slapped across the face. An adult walks in the room, you make eye contact, you say, "Hello, sir. Hello, ma'am. If not, I'm going to smack you in the mouth." You can claim you're autistic all you want. I'm still going to smack you in the mouth. You know, maybe if someone would have smacked these kids in the mouth when they were 4 or 5 years old being disrespectful, they wouldn't be so autistic. All right. Now, I know that there are mentally retarded and mentally disabled people. Don't get me wrong. I know that there's that. And they don't need to be smacked in the mouth. But the little brats who don't make eye contact and fidget and look at their belly buttons instead of adults when they enter the room, they need a smack in the mouth is what they need. And not with a stick or not with a no, with your hand right across the mouth. All right. I could probably be arrested for saying that. My kids survived somehow my abusive, tyrannical reign. Okay, now we go to the, do I want to do this story with, you know what, I don't want to do stories on abortion anymore. I just really don't, it's not that I don't care anymore, it's just, everything's so contrived and in industry, it's all industry tripe and propaganda, you can't hardly report on it anymore. After Renee Good was killed, I'm not sure what exactly happened there with her in the car and the hitting the guy. And I mean, it all was very sad and tragic. I don't know if she freaked out and got scared. I don't know if the cop overreacted. I really don't know. I'm not here to say that anyone murdered anyone or that anyone is a saint, because I really don't know. I saw the videos. I still don't know. The other guy who got shot, the nurse, the nurse who they photoshopped to make him look like Tom Selleck. I don't know what the guy did. I'm not sure what happened there. All of you who are sure and who are posting online that so-and-so's a murderer or so-and-so's a saint, I would advise you to just sit down and shut up, because you don't know. I guarantee you there's people who were in that pile in the fight with the guy who got shot. They don't know what happened because, you know, it was pretty chaotic. We don't know. So I would just keep your powder dry on that one for a while, boys and girls. Just wait. But this is a story from about Renee Good, which is the last one. She's been forgotten, tossed up under the side, kicked under the bus, thrown to the curb, put out with the laundry. Oh, Renee Good, you can't hardly find anything about her. They got a much better one now with the guy with the beard in the Photoshop. But Renee Good, this is from the Fighting Words file, by the way. Fighting Words, I said. Since federal agents killed Renee Good, the hapless leftist agitator and victim of feminism and divorce. That is who Renee Good was. A hapless leftist, a victim of feminism and divorce, and quite possibly the victim of false Christian doctrine and theology. Because she may have never had a chance to actually understand Christianity because of the shallow stupidity of most of the people around her who called themselves Christians her whole life, who never actually explained the gospel to her or her state in the universe. They just told her she was nice and she needed to accept Jesus. You need to have a personal relationship with Jesus after you call him into your heart. Allow Jesus into your heart. Can I just tell you people, if Jesus wants into your heart, you can't stop him. And for those of you who think you need to accept Jesus, trust me, you need Jesus to accept you. All right. Anyway, since her unfortunate and untimely death of Renee Good, right-wing influencers have coined a new acronym for women like her in general, affluent white female liberal. Affluent white female liberal. Do the math on the acronym. That's right. AWFL, awful. Affluent white female liberal. The acronym has taken off. Some people have added a U, affluent white female urban liberal. So here's the thing, folks. And I know it's cute, right? It because it applies to so many women that I see at the grocery store. The one with the mask, right? Buying the organic blueberries. And we can all laugh, and it's okay to laugh at one another. But once you start applying acronyms like awful to people, and this is just a symptom of the screaming F you at one another, which has become something of a regularity. The awful is just one more symptom of the fighting words that are floating around, and we should all try to reduce tensions. Let's see. I don't... is there something... Are we about out of time here? What should I end on here? Let me try to find a good... Let me try to find a good story to end on. It's very difficult because so much of this is of no interest. I build up stories all week and then I get to the time to do the show and I realize I don't care about any of this stuff. I just don't care because it's all so meaningless. And so here you got Democrats in Virginia want to promote abortion right up to birth. We need to stop that. Okay, I'm just, please forgive me if you can't get my attention. All right, how about this, folks? How about peace in the Middle East? We've been talking about Christianity. We've been talking about the end of the world. We've been talking about what it actually means to forgive people. And so just maybe I didn't make it clear. If you forgive somebody, that means you trust them afterward. You love them and you no longer want them prosecuted. And you would leave them alone with your wife and kids in your house for the weekend with access to your bank account and everything else. That's what forgiveness is. Not to put too fine a point on it. Anything short of that, you're not forgiving them. You can say you are, and you can pretend you are because other people tell you that you must, and so you do, and then you pretend you do, but you really don't. And so if you do that long enough, you'll lose track, and you'll lose the ability to recognize actual forgiveness because you've lied about it for so long. So just don't do it. If somebody doesn't repent and you're mad at them, don't forgive them. Just don't. And then maybe an event will happen where you're able to forgive them and then you'll actually forgive them. You'll experience forgiveness and then you'll know what it is. And that'll help you understand Jesus Christ better because you won't have lied to yourself for half of your life. Okay, now let's go quickly to Hamas in Gaza. Where is this the story that I want? Oh, listen, this is perfect to end on. This is from the widespread bureaucracy file, or well-planned bureaucracy file, I should say. Here's what's going to happen in Gaza, according to Jared Kushner, who's laid out the plan. Jared Kushner is going to bring peace to Gaza. The first thing they're going to do is the United States has sent a message to the United Nations Security Council telling them that monitors are going to supervise a process of demilitarization, placing weapons permanently beyond use. Huh? What? Placing weapons permanently beyond use. How? Because I don't even know what that means, but how are you going to do that? Kushner's pretty slick. Before you can even figure out what he means by placing weapons permanently beyond use, you haven't even figured through all of those syllables yet before he says we have an internationally funded buyback and reintegration program. At this point, everybody's like, buyback and reintegration? I don't even understand what either. I know what a buyback is for weapons. We do that down at the high school. But what? Reintegration? And Jared pauses, calms everybody down. And he says, what reintegration means is that the weapons that we buy back will then be used by the new army of the new Palestinian state. That's not capital P Palestinian state, because we're not going to have that, but it's a small P Palestinian. It's actually going to be run by me and some accountants out of my dad's back office at Trump Tower. Don't worry about it. And I'm not actually talking about an actual Palestinian state. The weapons that we buy back will then be used by the new army of the small P Palestinian state that's going to run Gaza. And yes, some Hamas members will be included in that police force slash army. Some. Not all, and we're going to screen them very tightly. You know, like we've been doing with the, yes, everything's screened, very tightly screened. If the United States has already agreed to include several former Hamas police officers and officials in the management, quote-unquote, of the new Gaza, quote-unquote. But here's the big news, Jared. Now, everyone's kind of wondering, what is going on? Could this kid be serious? And he says, wait, we have a coastal tourism zone planned. There will be over 100 skyscrapers reaching up into the sky, a beautiful new skyline, hotels, infinity pools, palm trees. It's all going to be, we're going to call it New Rafa. Just like, and New Gaza, you know, like New York and New Jersey. It's going to be the Atlantic City of the Mediterranean. And you can all buy shares starting the day after tomorrow when me and my dad make an announcement. My dad, I mean, I call him dad. He's my father-in-law, but he might as well be my dad. I love him. So that's Jared's plan, to buy back the weapons and then reissue them to Hamas and create a wonderful new vacation spot in Hamas. Oh, and by the way, Hamas will be given amnesty, some of them. I mean, those who haven't already been killed by the Israelis, right? So some of them will be given amnesty and will be integrated into the new government. But don't worry about that. That's not going to threaten the Disneyland-like atmosphere that we will create in the new Palestine. That's it, folks. That's the Weekly Worldview for this week. We'll be back next time. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.